Accession number 27185, reel 28.
Major Barrett, reel 28.
We did suffer some casualties, I think. I mean, I can't remember, but we were talking about... but from what I remember talking to people afterwards, we did suffer some casualties there. And the repercussions of this was very heavy artillery from the Germans.
Did you dig in on the position the Germans occupied or take up residence in their possessions?
No, I think we didn't stay there very long. I think there was another occasion when we sort of having captured something. Well, we stayed in the district. I know there was very heavy shelling after that, and most of it went over our heads and landed on Britannia quarters, I think, round about. It was still down and behind in the dip, and back behind that. The next thing that happened was there was a stomach problem going around at that time.
What was causing that? Did you have
flies?
Flyers.
I think, or food poisoning, one or the other. A lot of soldiers were getting it, and when they got it, they were evacuated for 48 hours to a field hospital or something, because they were quite useless walking around running to the laboratory every 5 minutes. And then cured and came back good as new. Fortunately, it hit me at this time, and I went off down to see the quack, as we used to call him, and expecting him to give me a sort of Bob Martin's nose powder or something and say okay. But he didn't. He told me to go and lie down in the barn there where the RAP was, and gave me something to take, I think. But I was still, I mean, I was pretty weak, actually. I remember feeling a bit weak, and every now and again I had to rush off down to the, what was called a lavatory. It was dug in a hole in the wall, in the ground. After I'd been there a few hours, I think it was, lying down, CO Jeffrey Ellick came and saw me and said, asked me how I was, and asked that quack, and he said, well, there's going to be an operation coming off this evening or tomorrow, which C Company's going to be involved in. And I said, well, I'd better be getting back then. And he said, no, you're going to stay where you are. And he talked to the doctor. Actually, it was a sensible thing to do. I'd been quite useless going around to a company commander, having to go behind a hedge every 5 minutes. Anyway, so I didn't go. Now,
who took over in your place?
My second in command, who was Peter Chell, Captain Peter Chell. He was in another wood. I don't know the circumstances completely, but he got killed. Now, this is something, obviously, which I felt quite deeply about. Not at the time, because you don't feel deeply about people becoming casualties at the time. Funnily enough, you say it's bad luck or something and carry on what you're doing. But obviously, I felt quite strongly about this, and sometimes it comes back to me, you know. Sort of. He's married and got two kids. Now, they were attacked in the wood, and my sergeant major was wounded at the same time. I don't know what happened. It may be that had I been there, I wouldn't have been killed, because I'd have been standing in a different position. This is the fortunes of war. You can be 1 inch to the right, another inch to the left, and be all right. Another inch, and you'd be wrong. You get it. 1 second or 2 seconds later, and you move somewhere else, and you get it. So it's the fortunes of war. He may have been, for all I know, been knocked off later in the war, or been wounded. However, that happened at that time. So that was very unfortunate. I gather there was quite a lot of casualties happened at that time in that wood.
Was that also in the vicinity of Thury Har?
Yes, yes, yes. It was just beyond Kwasi, I think.
Yes.
I wrote a letter to his wife, and she wrote a sweet letter back to me. But there he was dead.
How long had you had him as your 2IC?
Not long, actually. I can't remember, because you didn't see your 2IC all that much if you were in the line, because they were usually sort of pottering around behind in...
What would they be doing then? What role did the 2IC
have? Well, it was not an awful lot. I mean, they'd be sort of looking after administration and making sure the food came up or transport was organised. If we needed blankets and that sort of thing, they'd be sent up in a truck and was handed out. Blankets were always done up in bundles of 10. I never knew why in the army, considering sections were 7 at that time. Sometimes he spends some time with you, or you get him to go and do something which you weren't able to do because you were busy somewhere else. But it's in wartime, the second in command was sort of there, ready to take over from you if you got killed. And we were quite lucky, actually. Well, we got two company commanders knocked out at Verrier, one killed and one wounded. But after that, we didn't lose any more company commands at all for the whole war.
Was he a regular?
Sorry? No, he wasn't.
ETA, or was he?
I don't think he was. No, I think he was.
Conscript.
He was called up before the war, probably, or may have joined voluntarily. I know his father was in the Essex before him. I remember him telling me. So he's probably a volunteer. He may have joined up before the war, not as a regular, but he may have been with a TA. I don't know. So that happened. Of course, by now I'd lost everybody. I'd lost my second in command, RSM, and all three platoon commanders. One killed and two wounded. And a lot of people, a lot of soldiers as well. But we began, I think the first draft we got sometime during the Normandy campaign were straight from the ITC at Worley Barracks, which were Essex. So they were part of the family.
Yeah.
They came briefed, they were told what the regiment stood for, its history and everything. And RSM Sutton, who was our RSM in the early days of the war, was then RSM at the ITC. So I'm sure he would have seen quite a part from the officers there. Later, and about this time, I think, or perhaps a little later, we began to get a hodgepodge of reinforcements.
Where did they come from?
Light ACAC, Canadians. We had some Scots. I remember we had two. Later, when I was had another company, I got two Scotsmen there, and they were homesick. I mean, they weren't homesick for Scotland. They were just homesick for other jocks. But, you know, they rode in. I mean, everything happened. But it wasn't the same as it was before, obviously, when you've got everybody the same and all been trained together.
But how did they reach you? Did they come to you via Worley, or did they come to you via...
Oh, they came... No. They came from those other units, or...
Yes.
I mean, Light ACAC. I don't think they anticipated they would ever find themselves in the line somehow. But they would have done their basic training, so they would have known which end of the rifle the bullet came out. I assume that they must have been given some short infantry training before they came to us. Because Light ACAC became redundant after a bit, obviously, because of the air supremacy we had.
How did they settle in once they'd arrived in the
country? Well, they seemed to settle in all right. But it was, you know, by this time I didn't know anybody. You couldn't get around to know everybody. I can't remember the names of the platoon commanders I had then. I mean, I knew everybody to start with. I mean, I knew my RSM was Porter, Sergeant Major Porter. My CCMS was Parker, Suffolk, Swede. Admirable chap. Wherever we were, we got our hot meal up at night, and he saw to it. He stayed. He was all right. But, well, he'd been back at Bieschon, you see, and so yes. He was quite safe. Then there was Murphy, who got wounded on a patrol, Whitley, who got killed at Tilly, and then Haxel, who got wounded some stage, I can't remember where. Then after that, my mind just hasn't taken in the ones that came and went, unfortunately. You didn't get to know them. So leadership became very, very difficult. And it was difficult, really, to know who you could send on patrol, for instance.
Were there any old soldiers left at that stage?
I think there were one or two around, but I think most of... We had one or two from the 1st Battalion, I remember, which was in India at this time. And some of them had come back, been posted home for various reasons. and then gone to the depot and then been drafted out to us. So we did have one or two there. But I think most of the private older soldiers had gone by then because they were getting on a bit. But there were still sort of NCOs, WOs and people around, although CSM Porter, who I had, who was an excellent chap, was TA.
Was there anything you could do to promote a sort of settling down into the company amongst all these disparate...
Not really.
Odds and ends?
No, we didn't get much chance, really. as you'll see when I get later on, I had to reform a company. We got little chance of doing any training or anything before we were put in the line. The idea is that we wouldn't be put in the line, but in fact, circumstances were such that we were. We were definitely running short of manpower, it was obvious now, and I think that although I think Monty did his best to, and some of the senior commanders did their best to avoid unnecessary casualties, we were still getting them, obviously, because there was a job to be done.
Well, by now, you had been in the line, effectively, or in contact for quite a long time, and you'd landed on the 6th of June.
Yeah.
And you had been in the theatre for June, July.
Yeah, we hadn't been out of reach of the enemy.
For about 10 weeks or so.
No, we hadn't been out of reach of the enemy all that time.
But did you notice that this was having an effect on the soldiers? Were they showing signs of fatigue?
There were one or two cases of battle fatigue, as it was called. My batman, for instance, which I was saying, talking about batman,
yes,
orderly as he would have been then, became what one would call battle fatigued. And what happened then was they were sent back to a field hospital or somewhere for 2 or 3 days and then reappeared again, which was a very sensible thing to do. They were handled very well, I thought.
When he came back, was he all right again?
He didn't come back.
He didn't?
No. Mm-hmm. I think he was... I had a letter from... He sent a letter to my parents, actually, because he didn't know where I was. But he said that he'd suffered a bit.
What were the signs of battle fatigue then?
Nervousness, really, and distraction, I think. It's very difficult to tell, but I mean, they usually admitted themselves that they'd had enough, or, you know, couldn't go on. Sometimes it's possible just talk them into it, and all they needed to do was to talk to somebody. But there was very little of it. I don't remember. I can't put my finger on any particular case except him, poor chap, simply because he happened to be nearest to me.
I think you were saying earlier on that being a batman was a particularly difficult...
Yes, it was.
What
yeah.
was that? What was
well, because an officer exposed himself to the enemy, much more than most did, because he was going around positions and when everybody was dug in the hole. First of all, he'd be going around sorting out where people were going to go. Then when they were in their positions, it was his duty to go around, visit them now and again, see if they were okay and so forth. He'd be out doing reconnaissance, looking at the ground and everything like that. So he was out probably more vulnerable than most. And if his batman was walking behind him, he was vulnerable as well. But he didn't have the motivation an officer has of doing a job of work. He was just there.
So he'd have the exposure and the danger, but
he wouldn't have anything to fix his mind on,
to do to keep himself occupied.
That's right.
From the
yeah
danger.
He'd be probably carrying your map and that sort of thing, or
yes.
You want him to do something, you'd chat to him when you could, but I mean it was impossible. I don't think I was aware of, actually, that he stayed quite some time. I can't remember where he'd decided really that he'd had enough, but can't remember him even telling me, or whether he actually just went and reported to the RAP. That's sometimes that happened. Someone would go and go to the RAP and report. But there was very little of it.
You mentioned the stomach trouble, which obviously, you said probably flies or food.
Well, I was told it was flies, yeah.
Apart from that, were there any other cases of widespread illness?
No, everybody was... Well, I mean, they're remarkably fit and tired, put it that way, after a bit. But, I mean, our uniforms became ragged a bit. You know, they were sort of beginning to get... Not so much ragged, but they were beginning to look not the sort of thing you'd go on guard mounting in. There were mobile bath units which came up, I think, as far as Brigade, and the parties would go back there, and you'd have a shower, and you had complete change of underclothing. I can't remember, I don't think they gave us our new uniforms, but certainly you've got new vest and pants to put on. So we didn't get lice in our hair like they did in the First World War, and we were able to keep reasonably hygienically clean.
How often did those come round?
I couldn't say. About once a fortnight, I think, or something like that. But I don't know whether everybody... You couldn't always go back. I mean, if you were involved in the thing would come up, Brigade headquarters, presumably, and if you were involved in the battle, you couldn't ask the Germans to stop a minute whilst you sort of detailed off 10 men to go back to the bath unit.
And it was your bath time.
So, yes, your bath time. So, OK, carry on. I can't remember, I'm afraid.
You mentioned going back to the baths at Bayeux on occasion. Did
yes.
that happen again, or was that just once?
No, that was just once we went back there. I think that presumably others must have used it. I suppose as the bridgehead got bigger and wider and we got further and further away from Bayeux, as many of the, or Bayeux as the French insist on calling it, well, I suppose it's their place, they're entitled to, the people who mostly used it were lines of communication troops and headquarters and that sort of thing. So the bath units had to come out to the fighting troops.
How long were you actually down with the stomach complaint before you could go back to
it? I can't, well, it wasn't long. It was only 2 or 3 days. And then you were perfectly fit after that, after it had gone. But I was told there were flies around the place spreading this disease. It was quite prevalent at that time.
Beyond the battalion?
Oh, yes, it was. It brings me to the cows that used to get slaughtered in No Man's Land. I think anybody who's been in Normandy will remember the cows which got killed in crossfire and lay out in No Man's Land, blown up on their backs with their legs in the air and beginning to smell. That was always part of the scenery.
The dead cows?
Yeah. Mm.
What happened then after you got back to the company? You'd been in the RAP.
Oh, yeah, well, I just took over again. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no problems after. I can't. No, I don't think I did at that stage. No, I don't think they were available. I did say that we got very heavily shelled, didn't I, after. Yes, that's right, because that was something which I remember very well. We were with 59 Div now, and then very shortly after this, 59 Div was broken up, and we joined 49, Polar Bear Division. They had the flash of the polar bear because they'd been in Iceland, or was it Greenland? Iceland, eh?
I think Iceland.
Yeah, for some time. So, I'm just thinking, what have we got? What happened after that? Oh, yes, we joined 1st Canadian Army. The 49 Division was put together with the 51st Highland, made up 1st Corps, 1st British Corps. And then we were put into the 1st Canadian Army and formed the 2nd Corps. I don't think many people realise that... half the Canadian army was British. Yes. I wouldn't say I'd go so far as say half, but half the infantry divisions were certainly British. Well, of course, the Falaise Gap was now being closed at this stage, and the war was moving pretty fast in all directions. And when we joined 1st Canadian, we found ourselves right up east of Caen. Where the Canadians were. And then we started going east towards the Seine. But we found, of course, in this area, the Germans hadn't had the same drubbing as they had further west and south, like they did in the Falaise Gap and other places. So they were quite alive and ready to fight.
Were you aware of what was going on at the time, of the big picture of the Falaise?
Oh, must have been. Oh, yes, must have been. I can't say it off the back of my top of my head. But, of course, there were divisional papers were distributed. And I remember, I still found one from 1590 somewhere. I don't know where it is now. Which explained to us what was happening in Burma. Because Imphal, the defence of Imphal at that time of the Royal West Kensens was taking place and stopped the Japanese from getting into India and turned the Burmese campaign round. I remember that was in there. So I've no doubt, we must have been, yeah, no doubt. But we now find ourselves going parallel with the coast, more or less, crossing a number of rivers.
So this was going northeastwards from Caen, then, if you remember?
Yeah, north, yes.
Yes, because you were going down towards Le Havre, wouldn't you? And then
that's right,
yes.
Yeah.
How were you moving by that stage? Were you motorised by then? Or
at this stage, we were still on our flat feet. I think we probably got transport to take us from where we were up to where we joined the 1st Canadian Army, because that was some distance. And it had been, if the transport was available, it would have been a sheer waste of time and effort and energy to make us march all that way. So we probably got transport there. I remember although we didn't have too much difficulty crossing these rivers, they were quite narrow ones. Although the Germans were fairly perky on occasions, they withdrew pretty quickly. There was we didn't have any big fights up there.
No serious opposition.
No. No, there was, there were occasional sort of opposition. The one thing I remember is the river Rhyle, or Rhyl, as the French might call it, where there were a mass of mosquitoes. We got bitten to hell there. I remember, the mosquitoes as big as wasps almost. And we had to stay, but nothing we could do about it. We just stuck there and we just got bitten. Luckily, after that, we moved. Then we did get transport, I remember, to a place called, we were heading for Audemer.
Audemer.
Yes.
In Upper Normandy.
Pont Audemer.
Yes.
On the River Rhyl. Hmm. Or Rhyl, they probably called it. I don't know whether we were given, I think we were given Pont Audemer as an objective, and it was decided that we should try and cross the river further down rather than going to the town, although I believe the town this side, because the river, the town stood astride the river, hence Pont or Pont, and this side was already, I think, in the hands of one of our battalions, I can't remember which, and we relieved them, and then it was decided to go further down the river and try and cross there, because it was fairly wideish.
Not at the town itself?
Not in the town itself at that stage.
Going upstream or downstream?
We went upstream, because it obviously downstream is getting wider, so
yes.
We might have gone down the other way, it might have been easier actually, but what happened, we were given some folding boats, those little collapsible canvas salt boats.
Had you ever done a crossing in the...
No, area? Nothing at all.
No.
We just given them, so we did a bit of sort of dry shod stuff with just with oars and things. We had to do it at night.
You were doing a night?
Yeah, we had to advance to the river. Of course, we hadn't the river hadn't been taken down there at that stage, but luckily there was nothing between us and the river. I think this was established by patrols.
Yeah.
But on the other side of the river, there was a very steep escarpment which overlooked the river, and where the Germans were already installed. And I remember very well going down at night with these, carrying these boats, making a hell of a racket, actually, because it's very difficult to get down there and carry boats and everything.
How many men did you have per boat?
Oh, I have no idea. But I think it's about a section per boat, probably. And when we got down to the water's edge, we started to sort of put them in the water, and then all hell let loose. The flares went up, 88s from sides started opening up, spandaus from the top of the escarpment, and it was totally impossible to cross. And we had to withdraw. I think it was probably not a good idea in the first place to try and get across there. It was this high escarpment, which completely dominated the river below. So having tried that, I don't remember. I think we must have got some casualties. I don't see how we could have done without them. It was then decided to go through Pont Audemer and cross. And funny enough, it was found that you could walk through the river there. There was a sort of ford, or there was a bit of shallow. And as far as, it wasn't my company, it was another company who got a section across into a house on the other side, and then they got surrounded by the Germans, who were still very much alive on the other side. And they had to hold on for several hours, and they held on. And then the rest of the company got across, but it wasn't mine, so I can't give you the complete detail. I don't know whose it was.
Did you see them doing it?
No. And the Germans just went after that.
Well, they abandoned their...
They just abandoned, yes, there wasn't any fight.
Any attempt to blow the bridge?
No. Don't think so. The bridge may have been blown. Already before we got there.
Because you were crossed by the ford then, Rob.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So that was one more little battle. From there, we made towards the Forêt de Breton, which was on this side of the Seine. Of course, we're well into August now. In fact, we're heading towards the end of August, I think. I can remember getting near the Bois and being met with fire from it. The Germans started to oppose us there.
Were you in tactical formation?
Yes, we were at that stage. But I mean, we didn't... when we were moving towards the Breton, we weren't. We were sort of going up there and...
during column of road?
Well, yes. With sections staggered and spaced out.
On the other side of the road.
Yes, yeah. When we got near the forest, or before we saw it, obviously we would then deploy. Mm. And a plan of attack was made.
Did you know the Germans were in there before they...
Yes,
started?
Yes, mm. Yeah.
How far was it from the forest that you deployed from your marching formation into your attacking formation?
I cannot remember. I can remember the open ground before the wood. It wasn't very far, actually. I think it was about 300 or 400 yards at the most.
What sort of fire were the Germans...
Not a lot.
...delivering?
Not a lot.
Small arms? Or
mostly small arms, yeah.
Anything heavy? Any more?
No, I don't remember it. I remember spandaus rattling away. Because if once you've heard a spandau, you always recognise the brup. And then it, as we got near there, it just died down. And we went into the wood, and that was it. They'd finished. And the wood was packed with all kinds of equipment which had either been burnt or left. Tanks, guns, lorries, and Germans wandering around